welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. We're absolutely excited to have you guys hanging out with us for the next 20-some-odd minutes. It's going to be great. Lots of fun things to talk about. But I will also say there's some stories that kind of raised my eyebrows as I was pulling stories for the show this week. So you're going to want to hang out. You're going to want to find out. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors radio show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Avid outdoorsmen know that heading to the field without all the advantages, not a good idea. Most importantly, a stable shooting platform. Having the right platform can be critical to success. Field Optics Research is the industry leader, offering the most advanced, lightest, and stable tripods on the market. It's stability you need when that once-in-a-lifetime shot is in your crosshairs. Field Optics, the ultimate tripod for hunting, shooting, long-range precision shooting, spotting scopes, and outdoor photography.
Links to Field Research Optics available on thevalleyoutdoors.com.
Good to see you, Ava.
It's good to see you as well. Who are we missing?
Yeah, there's a blank spot in the middle of the lineup.
It's so sad and empty.
Yeah, well, we'll just have to fill in for him. We're pinch hitting for him. Yes, that's right, Don Cleaver. He's not here.
Yep.
But the show always goes so much faster when he's not here.
He's doing fun things this time, though.
Yeah, I think he is.
So, well, I'm sure we'll hear of
wedding
his.
A line someplace, maybe around.
Somewhere far away.
I don't know if it's far away or not.
I'm pretty sure it is.
I don't know if it is. I'm not positive. I can't tell you.
We'll find out.
I could
Trust
tell
me.
You, but then
we'll
it wouldn't be it wouldn't be good.
Oh.
No. People don't tell you where you go fishing, do they? When you're catching lots of fish.
No, but.
See? That's the story, and we're sticking with it.
Okay.
And I have to say, I certainly hope that the weather we're getting across the Midwest is not happening where Don's at, because this week has been relatively brutal between rain almost every day. Then we had the one Wednesday, Thursday with the wind that was, in fact, Tuesday was windy too. I mean, it's just a week, and I'm talking blowing hard.
Yeah, gusts over 30 for sure.
And, you know, it's not a good thing to fish in those conditions at all, no matter what anybody says.
Right.
So, yeah, makes for a lot of questions when you want to go out fishing. Prime example is on the river, and one of the things that comes up anytime you get water like this, and it's one of those things where one of my buddies owns Everett's Resort down here on the right up from Red Wing just a little bit. And he was commenting, he said, somebody, well, we're past flood conditions. We don't have to worry about flooding anymore. And of course, he's always saying, not so fast. Sometimes the June rains are just as bad, if not worse.
Yeah. Who would have thought, though? The last few years, it's been pretty dry in June.
I think it was 3-4 years ago we had flood stage scenario that carried into June.
June?
Yeah. Yep. Hmm. And it was all rain related. And of course, as the saying goes down here, we're at the end of the pipe. Everything gathers across the central part of the state, drains into the Minnesota River, and then it drains into the Ole Miss. And she's a bit cloudy. Shall we say a lot of dirt, a lot of debris. Just a lot of stuff in general. So if you're out in the river, be driving with extreme caution. There's trees and everything in the river right now that are just a danger. Let's put it that way.
How high is it supposed to get here in Red Wing?
13 in Red Wing.
I saw that crest, and I know that you do like the extended forecast.
Yeah.
Is that really where we're going to crest, or are you going to see
Sounds
it?
Like Sounds like it's going to crust at that point, but all depends on what happens in precipitation in the next 3-4 days.
I was going to say this, it's supposed to crest like Monday or Tuesday.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They say it's supposed to rain today, Saturday today. But it'll all impact it. There's no way around it. It'll impact it. And you watch that forecast change. If you're looking to find the river levels, you can do that on NOAA, the NOAA site, N-O-A-A, and just pull up the river forecast and you can pull it up. But yeah, it's...
Do you even go out?
Yeah.
When it's high like this?
Oh, absolutely. Right. You fish the best. And that was one of the reasons I brought it up. Anytime you're in a high water situation, the fish are still biting. You just go to back areas, like in the lake. You can go to the lake and do some those shoreline areas. And the fun part is the fish will move up onto shelves that they normally wouldn't be on because it's
Why
normally...
Why not, kind of thing?
Yeah, well, it's normally 6 feet, you know, 3 to 6 feet deep, and now it's 12 feet deep. So,
well, my husband caught that massive northern right there at that rest stop north of Lake City off the retaining wall because it was so flooded. It was up.
Yeah.
So he just cast it off of that. And that's
a key area, you know, anywhere along that, the Hoaxilla shoreline.
Yeah, but during high water too, it's crazy.
You're talking Dairy Queen down and just, you know, up from Lake City.
Yeah.
So a lot of those areas are good, but anywhere you're going to find a more slack current, you know, behind some of these points, those fish will hang out. And make sure you use some darker baits. That's going to be the key. Dark baits work. Bright baits don't work because they need light to make them more active.
Okay.
And the darker baits are going to be your better of the baits rather than the whites.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, that was a big one. Is the water going up and how many streets are going to close and everything else going on? I know Minneapolis is crusting at 14.
Mm-hmm.
So
I always think of like Wabasha. Doesn't take much for Wabasha to feel it, you know?
No. Minneapolis is up and a lot of streets are closed or have been closed. They started, I think it was Wednesday, they started closing this week. It was funny that one of the streets is closed. It's called Water Street.
Water Street is closed.
It's because there's water. It's water covering it. Story coming out of the Boundary Waters, it's not a happy story. It's a sad and, I guess, good story. You know, I talked about it before we came on today. The bodies of two canoeists who went over a waterfall in the Boundary Waters have been recovered. Authorities found the bodies of the two men that went over a waterfall while fishing near Minnesota and Ontario border this last month. They found the remains of Melvin Grahams of Llano Lakes on Monday and the Boundary Waters, again, canoe area. And then they also found 41-year-old Cambridge resident Jesse Melvin Haugen last Friday. And Sheriff's Department said the two others are fishing on top of the Curtain Falls between Crooked Lake and Iron Lake and the border. Two canoes went over the waterfall after paddlers in one boat tried to help the others. Two others survived and were okay. Bad weather hampered the search. And sad thing. So always be careful. Wear your safety PFDs. And
yes, but we're thankful they were found. Some closure for the families.
Absolutely. So tell you what, stay tuned. We're going to talk a little bit about a weird thing going on in Pennsylvania with dog treats and fish hooks. Talk to you soon. Hang tight. Welcome back, everybody. Of course, I'd like to have you guys check us out on Facebook and where else?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Perfect. Lots of fun stuff. Interactive map. We always talk about the interactive map. It is pretty doggone cool. Go to the area you want to go to. Click on it. It'll take you to the DNR website and any activities that you want. It'll have all the dates and what's going on, anything special happening as well. So pretty neat little contraption, as they say. So, alluded to it prior to the break. You and I talked about it a little bit over the break. Out of Pennsylvania, I think it's, how do you start a story like this? It's just sad. State Game Land, they have a special alert that was sent out by the Pennsylvania Game Commission. A special alert to dog owners and hikers. This happens to be in a state game land area, and the game commission is asking those finding dog treats with fish hooks in them to contact the agency. Disturbing incident involving dog treats embedded with fish hooks in the state game land in Lehigh County remains under investigation after nearly a month after they've been discovered. At least a dozen booby trap treats were found by hikers on May 5th in the Appalachian Trail and state land set 217. They were scattered in a popular spot between two different roads and shelter areas and not far from the Lehigh Gap Nature Center. And hiker contacted the Nature Center, which in turn notified the Game Commission, and wardens were dispatched. The commission posted an advisory with photos of the of these doggy treats laden with fish hooks. The outreach was a heads up to the visitors and made a hope in generating leads to the perpetrators and see if they can't find out who did it. Within days of that post, they generated a reach of over 2 million people, which is awesome. And they were fielding media calls from across the country. Struck a chord with many people. It was shared, shared, and shared. And there were hundreds of comments. People were outraged. The Nature Center was also posting an advisory on its Facebook page urging hunters to be vigilant and hikers as well. Let's see. There's no reports of wildlife perishing. While the commission had received a few tips, said they're still seeking more information. Granted, they're accustomed to dealing with all types of items from drug paraphernalia to discarded tires and graffiti, but dog treats rigged to do harm is a first. Nobody had ever experienced that and seen that. Depending on what the investigation reveals, he added, it could result in multiple charges relating to both game code and state crime code violations. It was a deliberate and disturbing act. Stoner said the tainted treats were half a mile or more from where anyone could get to a vehicle, so they'd have to be carried in. They were clearly visible on the trail and looked like they hadn't been there for long. So what kind of a crappy human being do you have to be to do that?
I am not sure. Honestly, when I see things like this, I typically think of teenagers that don't really understand consequences of their actions.
You know,
do you know what I'm saying? Like, they think it's funny.
I do.
And it's really not funny.
I do. But
at all?
The number of them and the way that they were placed in it wasn't a random act of let's not think this through. It was put on state hunting game land where you would normally hunt. People take their dogs out. So it was intended to reach a certain, what do you call it, not demographic, but certain use, how people would use the territory, use that particular land. And I think in today's age of polarizing, I think it's attitudes possibly, and I think people are becoming less callous to things that have that kind of impact. I mean, if it's out of sight, it's out of mind. I'm going to stop somebody from hunting. They'll find these things out there, or stop anybody from using this land and for, you know, practicing with their retriever or whatever. Well, that certainly is going to have impact. And it's sad to say, but to me, it's almost like a terrorist act.
Yeah.
It really is. It's meant to cause that. It's meant
right.
to cause fear.
Harm.
Fear and harm because... your dog is part of your family.
Mm-hmm.
And if someone thinks a dog is not, they need to have their head examined. And to have somebody go and do this, you could seriously, if somebody found out who it was and they didn't take kindly to it, there could be, who knows what would happen if somebody wants to cause harm to part of their family. So as you would, hey, don't mess with my, you know, any part of my family, whether it's my dogs, my kids, or my husband or wife. That's the same thing has holds true here. So I find it very, I think the word is disturbing. Why somebody would actually think that that's, well, I guess it comes back to the same thing. There is no think, there is intent.
Right.
There is an intent, and it's not, you know, there's somebody had intention to do something, and thank goodness there were no dogs or animals hurt, because that could have been bad. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you look at the dog treats, it looks like what do you call those? It looks like a hot dog. And
oh, it's
with
like
a casing, and
yeah,
you know, like what do you the you buy them in a package? They're filled with pizza, or they're filled with, you know, that humans we can
yes.
buy. But pizza rolls, or, you know, the little tiny ones that have the pretzel on the outside and filled with whatever, but
filling on the inside.
Yeah, but that's what it looks like, with hooks in the middle of it, as well as sticking out of the outer. So pretty bad stuff. And of course, if that was embedded into some animal, treble hook's going to go in. It's not coming out. You ever get a treble hook in your hand before?
No.
Yeah. Multiple times. And it's not, it just doesn't come out.
Nope.
Not good. Anyway, so let's move on to a positive.
Could we? Because the last two stories
were downers. Well,
downers.
They're downers.
Man.
I know. I like to lead with down, and then we can finish on an up.
Okay.
Everything's up from here.
All right. The final 10 minutes, guys. Here
we
go.
We're going to pull this one out. We're going to do this. out of Minnesota, the Minnesota turkey hunters have shattered the previous record to harvest as the spring season concludes. The spring turkey season ended May 31st. Record-breaking years in the books. Total harvest reached 16,660 turkeys. And that is impressive, because it surpasses the 2020 record of 13,996.
Wow.
That's 2,600 more birds.
And Don Cleaver contributed.
He got one of those.
He
which
did.
One, I'm not sure, but he got one of those. Well, a few birds might still be reported. Most of the harvest is officially wrapped up. And it was a great season. The the analysis was, it was highest all time by a lot. And 2020 was a record. And of course, 2020, you know why, is partly because it was a record. It was with COVID. And everybody was able to go out. Now we don't have COVID, and we had significantly more birds that were harvested. The spring turkey hunting interest was strong. Licenses exceeded 60,000 licenses. That's the second highest number, with 2020 being the highest at 63,000 licenses. So it looks to be that there were more birds, which is a good thing. And success increased. The average rate is between 21 and 23%, and the 2024 season is 28% of harvest success rate. And it's kind of cool. They've got a graph, Ava. You can see the graphical representation of the years. And, yeah, it's significant. Last year was 13.6, 12.12, 10.10, 11.12. Back to 2015 was 11.6. So pretty significant increase in harvest, and back-to-back good years of nesting, which is a bonus. And of course, last the 2023-24 season was mild, so that definitely helped the young of the year birds survive. So 2024 nesting year is still uncertain, which, with the hatching happening right now, believes the 2024 rain came at a good time, allows for more insects and food to be there for the poults. Did you know that's a young turkey is a poult?
A poult.
A
it's
poult.
So great.
Yep. What do you do? In the Olympics, I went poult vaulting, as jumping over turkeys, but that's a different story. I think we're in good shape right now, he said. You know, it's one of those things where it's super hard, especially with turkeys, to predict, but they are a hardy bird, and any of the upland birds with the young, lots of rain is really not necessarily a great thing, but beyond that, they'll be fine. And they're just going to get wet because the temperatures are not super cold. So, yeah, pretty cool. One other item to note, two of the biggest talking points heading into the 2024 spring turkey season. It's centered on crossbows and youth hunting. The crossbows were legal for use by any age for the first time this spring. And the DNR did receive some complaints. Some hunters thought it was unfair the crossbow hunters were able to hunt every season, while firearms could only hunt in a one-week season and a final two-week closing season. Regardless, 7% of the total harvest came from crossbow users. He said it's interesting to see the number increases or stays relatively the same in the 2025 and future years. So it'll be kind of a, how does it play out with Crossboat? Is it going to go up? And once people figure out, it's kind of a fun, some people think it's a fun way to shoot. I think some of the people have tried it and they don't think it's as fun as a bow or as a shotgun. So I don't know. I've never shot a crossbow. You?
I feel like I have because my dad has one, so I'm sure I have. But
we'll just go with that. The DNR has also been advocating for more opportunities, and they continue to work this spring to get more youth hunters out spring turkey. And the results show is effective. He said about 3,200 turkey were harvested by youth this year. That's an increase from 2,500. So that's a big jump, which is good. And, you know, and that's the biggest issue right now. We don't have a lot of kids getting back or parents getting kids into the hunting side. There, a lot of it's going the other way. And I think a lot of it had to do with the opportunities that have been presented. So I think it's a kind of a, what would you call it? Return on investment, which is really cool. You know, we talked earlier this year when the current administration had rescinded funding for kids. That was archery in schools. That was for hunter education. It was for trap, anything to do with any firearm at all. It was completely eliminated. And, of course, when uproar happened, they went, oops, we got caught. Now we have to go back under a presidential signature, they finally were able to get the funding back. But, you know, it's always one of those things where you have to be diligent, write your congressmen and representatives to make sure they know that your particular belief is that...
what's important to you.
What is important and what's not important. So you've gone fishing or going to a camp where you have somebody that seems to be always in the know with the latest and greatest and everything, right? They're kind of the guru,
for sure.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. So for those of you that have that person you're at the cabin, you're heading to the cabin, you're heading out wherever you're going to head out to a gathering of outdoor people, there's always that one person that always seems to know more than everyone.
Mm-hmm.
I was saying go from the movie, who's the smartest one in the room? And they let you know. So I'm going to give you guys some, I guess, words with the definition of the words so you can use them appropriately in a sentence similar to a spelling bee so that you can figure out exactly how to baffle them and suddenly make them step back.
It's kind of like teen lingo.
Yeah. We're giving you some lingo. one of them is going to be involving crankbaits. People often wonder, why are crankbait colors dark on the top and light on the bottom? Well, it is called countershading.
Countershading.
Countershading. Okay. It's a unique color pattern, universally seen in fish, dark on the top, light on the bottom. So predators looking down see dark against a dark background. And when predators look up, they see light against a light background, which is really kind of fun. So what else do you want to know? Let me see. We're going to pull up how about fike nets? Fike net. Fike net is a fish trap set in shallow water with stakes or anchors. They're nets that are easy for fish to enter and hard to exit. Most Midwestern fisheries agencies and private aquaculture businesses use some form of a fike net, often referred to as a trap net.
Is it called a fike net?
Because it's called a fike net. Don't argue with me.
Okay.
Don't ask for a definition of the word. They just made the word up.
All right.
It's like, I
feel
know.
Like I'm in school.
Yeah, you are.
Don't ask any questions. Don't ask.
Yep,
just
exactly.
How about
the next word? Juvenile. That's what it's. Juvenile describes any fish before it reaches maturity.
Well, okay.
Yep. One of them that, there we go. Okay, so this has to do with a military word as well, having to do with the U.S. Navy. So it's oftentimes there's the word used literal, or in this case it's called littoral.
Littoral
is a limnological term meaning shallow water area along the shoreline. So those ships are designed to have a shallow draft and they can run closer to shore, and they're designed for that. They have jet drives. it's defined by the Minnesota DNR, for simply and consistency's sake, water under 15 feet of depth. The antonym to littoral would be profundal zone or deep zone of an inland lake. Where are you fishing? I'm fishing the profundal zone, and it's a great way that you don't have to tell anybody where you're fishing. How about you? Oh, I'm fishing the littoral zone. What does that mean? Figure it out.
Yeah.
Instead of saying, well, I'm fishing the shallow break line.
If you knew words,
use your words, would you please? Yep. So let's see. What else?
All right. You got about a minute.
I got a minute. Pirate perch.
Oh, no.
Pirate perch, one of the most unique fish species and deadly play for the letter P in the game's categories. The fish, the fish's butt is found in its mouth.
What?
I'm not joking. Seriously. Yeah, it's a unique, it is a fish species. No, I'm not joking. You think I would quit? I would quote something like that if it wasn't true?
Yes.
And last but not least,
Kay.
We're going to call it a red, R-E-D-D. It's a spawning bed of a trout or salmon in a river. The etymology of red originates as a Scottish word that means to clean an area or make it tidy, which is what trout and salmon will do with their tails to a spot in a stream or ripple before spawning.
That's a good one, Aaron.
Red, R-E-D-D. There you go. You have all that you need to have munition against that know-it-all in fish camp. Make it happen. Make it so. And we have done that for you here at the Valley Outdoors. For Abe and myself, we are out of here. Have a great weekend, everybody.